Chapter 26. If I didn't do something, another woman was going to die, and a couple of kids were going to become orphans. Of course, I also had a gun in my face. If I did do something, I would die. The smart thing would be to let Trixie finish delaying me and wait for her to leave. Emma would be dead, but I'd have at least 12 hours in which I could shut the Evil Eye franchise down. If I didn't cooperate, Emma and I would both die, and the bad guys would still be at large. So the smart money was on staying put. Simple logic. But there are things older than logic, like instinct. One of the most primal instincts in the human soul is the desire to protect children from harm. Even if the idea of Emma's death hadn't been motivation enough, the very thought of how savagely this stupid, venal, selfish harpy might scar Emma's children made me want to call down fire enough to roast Trixie Vixen and her sculpted ass to ash. I found myself tensing to go after her and damn the gun. It wasn't as brainless as you might think. Killing is not so easy as it seems. Most people are wired to be careful of their fellow human beings. Soldiers and cops both are specifically given training to overcome that instinct, and the criminals who fire at other people are usually driven to it by desperation. And even trained soldiers and hardened criminals are often wildly inaccurate. Billy the Kid once emptied his Colt revolver at a bank teller from less than 3 feet away and missed him 6 times. I'd seen a police reel of a cop who had been forced to draw and fire at a suspect, and he'd emptied a full clip at the man from less than 20 feet, missing him every time. Trixie may have had the gun, but she didn't have experience, training, or much in the way of composure. If she hesitated, even for a fraction of a second, it would be possible for me to close on her. If she didn't hesitate, the odds against me were not unthinkably high. It was possible that she might miss me enough times to let me take the gun. Of course, it was possible she'd put a bullet through my eye, too, or through my throat, or maybe my guts. I felt a sudden ethereal wind, cold and ugly. The curse was almost there, and it was deadlier, more potent than ever before. A bare second of concentration told me that I would have no prayer of blocking that much magic, and even redirecting so much raw power would be nearly impossible. I don't know what had happened to make the curse that much stronger, that much deadlier, and it scared me half out of my mind. I had to do something, and I had to do it now. I needed a distraction, but the best I could do was to abruptly whip my head toward the door and to shift my weight as if I might stand up.
"Don't move,"
Trixie snarled. I licked my lips, staring at the door. I saw her expression become uncertain. She rubbernecked toward the door, only for a second, but it would have to do. I threw my still-steaming coffee at her. It sloshed across her shoulder and neck. She screamed in surprise and sudden pain. I lunged at her, lifting the handset of the telephone to swing at her head. She cried out and stared at me, her lovely face stunned, terrified. The Quixote reflexes kicked in. I hesitated. The gun went off from 2 feet away. I recovered before I could lose much momentum and slammed into her, a full body impact that drove her shoulder blades up against the wall beside the door. The gun roared again, and the sharp, acrid tang of cordite and the syrupy smell of blood flooded over me. I got my fingers around the wrist of her gun hand and slammed it against the wall. The gun barked some more, but finally tumbled from her fingers to the floor. I kicked it across the room. Trixie clawed at my eyes with the nails of her free hand. Pain jolted through me. I got an arm around her waist and threw her bodily away from me, opposite the way I had kicked the weapon. She hit the table and folded over it, scattering a box of donuts and a plate of various fruits. Then she sank to the floor, sobbing. One of her stockings had been soaked in blood from ankle to calf, and she curled up, clutching at her wounded leg. I recovered the gun without touching the handle, checked, and found it empty. I turned my eyes to Trixie Vixen. She shrank away from me, weeping in pain and terror. She held up her other arm as a useless shield.
No. No, please. I didn't mean it. I didn't mean it.
The adrenaline rushed through me, wild and mindless. I wanted to kill her. A lot. I hadn't ever felt that before. A sudden surge of fury, contempt, and disdain mixed in with a physical excitement only a few degrees short of actual arousal. It wasn't an emotion. It was nothing that tame and limited. It was a force, a dark and vast tide that picked me up and swept me along like a styrofoam packing peanut. And I liked it. There was something in me that took a deep and gloating satisfaction in seeing my enemy on the floor and helpless. That part of me wanted to see her screaming, and then see her die screaming. I'm not sure how I kept myself from acting on that flood of violence and lust. But instead of gut-shooting Trixie, I stared coldly at her for a second, studying her injuries. One of the shots must have either bounced into her calf or entered directly when the gun had gone off during the struggle. She bled, but not enough to kill her anytime soon, and the lines of her calf and foot seemed twisted, slightly misshapen. The bullet must have broken a bone.
Please, she babbled, staring at the gun I now held. I'll do whatever you want. Just say it. Oh, God, please don't kill me.
I stalked to the door. I noted a couple of bullet holes in it and heard myself speak, my voice quiet and deadly cold. Shut up. She did, shuddering with sobs, hiding her face. The scent of urine joined the other smells in the room. I kept her revolver in hand and jerked the door open hard to rush through it and back to the soundstage to deal with the curse. I didn't have to bother. Emma's corpse lay on its back in the hall outside. She had been wearing spandex biking shorts with a matching sports halter. There was blood forming a pool beneath her. A small, neat hole directly into her sternum accompanied a hole in her forehead just over her right eyebrow. She lay with her knees bent beneath her, her arms spread a little. A prescription bottle lay on the ground, just barely touching one fingertip. She'd been dead before she fell, and her body had simply relaxed bonelessly to the ground. The shots couldn't have been more perfect if they'd been delivered by a professional assassin. The odds against stray bullets randomly hitting where they had were inconceivably high. The Malocchio had killed her. The stray bullets had simply been its instrument. I heard Trixie gasp behind me and turned to see her staring at the body.
No,
she whispered, the timing of the word somehow disjointed and random.
That wasn't in the plan. This wasn't part of it. He never said that.
I heard running footsteps coming down the hall and looked up in time to see a couple of the camera guys, Jake and Arturo, round the corner. They came to an abrupt stop, staring at the scene in shock. Someone, Jake, I thought, let out a high-pitched, squawking cry. I suddenly realized that I was standing over a dead woman while another bled from a bullet wound 10 feet away, and that I was holding the gun that did it to them both. Trixie's eyes widened as if she recognized the opportunity. Her mouth twisted into a sudden, vindictive, mad-eyed rictus. She let out a scream, wailing,
"Help me! Help me! Oh, God! Don't let him kill me, too!"
I didn't have long to decide on a course of action, but I got the benefit of one of those crystallized moments when nothing happens and it seems like you've got all the time in the world to think. I'd been too slow, and now Emma was dead. Worse yet, I looked guilty as hell, short term. In the long term, forensics would show that Trixie had been holding the gun when it went off, but I had never been on good terms with the largest part of Chicago's legal system, either in the courts or law enforcement. At least one cop, now in internal affairs, would be glad to take this opportunity to crucify me, and if I took my chances with the law, the weapon plus the eyewitness testimony of a would-be victim could provide the state with a reasonable case. Even if they didn't win, I could still spend the duration in prison, months or possibly years, until the case was decided. But all it would really take was 1 or 2 days. By then, Mavra and her scourge would find me and kill me. I knew from bloody experience that not even the strongest jail cell meant much to supernatural beings with murder in mind. I still didn't know who was helping Trixie. If I didn't figure out who was behind this mess, they could keep going, keep on killing. If I was out of the picture, they'd get away with it. And the thought stirred up my rage once more. Emma's death had changed things. Before, there had been danger, but no one had died on my watch. Not for lack of trying, sure, but I'd been there in time to avert any deaths. But now, Emma, whose worst crime probably had a lot to do with providing a decent living for her children, was lying there like so much meat, and her kids had no mommy. I stared at Trixie for a hot, wild second, and the look choked her continued shrieks to whimpers. Trixie may have been female, but as of that moment, she wasn't a woman anymore. She'd crossed a line. As far as I was concerned, she and her allies had forfeited their membership card to the Humanity Club when they killed Emma. And I'd be damned if I was going to let them get away with it. But I couldn't do it from the inside of a cell. I turned and hurried into an adjoining hall and toward the nearest door, but found it locked. I cursed and ran back, heading for the front door. Someone shouted, but I ignored them. I sprinted the last 20 feet and was about to hit the door when it abruptly swung open. Joan stepped in from the parking lot, panting. She wore old jeans and another flannel shirt over a tee. She had her keys in one hand and a claw hammer in the other. She'd gone through the locked door and beaten me to the exit. "What are you doing?" she demanded. I checked over my shoulder. I heard more shouts and running footsteps, heavy and fast. Bobby was running after me. If he tried to stop me here in the hall, I didn't think I could get away from him without hurting him, maybe badly. But when I took another step toward Joan, she swallowed, her face pale with fright, but her eyes determined, and lifted the claw hammer. "Joan," I panted, "I have to go." "No," she said. "I don't know what's going on, but I can't let you leave. I heard gunshots. Emma and Trish are hurt." I didn't have time to discuss it. I took a handkerchief from my pocket, wrapped it around the handle of Trixie's gun to maybe preserve any prints, and lifted it, not quite pointing it at Joan. "There's not time to explain, but if you don't let me go, it's going to keep happening. Someone else on the crew will get hurt tonight." Her expression became angry. "Don't you dare threaten these people." "It isn't a threat," I half screamed. I hated to do it, but I pointed the gun at her. "Move!" She started shaking, but adjusted her grip on the hammer and shook her head. "I mean it," I said, and took a step forward, radiating as much menace as I knew how. Joan stared at the gun for a moment. Then an expression of resolution took the fear from her face. She lowered the hammer and took a step toward me, putting the barrel of the gun about 6 inches from her sternum. "I can't let you hurt anyone else. If you want to leave," she said quietly, "you'll have to kill me too." I stared at her for a moment. Then I gripped the gun's barrel with my left hand, left the handkerchief around the handle, and offered it to her. She stared at me. "What are you doing?" "Take it," I said. "Trixie's fingerprints are on the handle, so don't touch it. She was the shooter. She's working with someone, and they're responsible for all the deaths and injuries lately. But when the cops show, she'll lie to them, and it looks bad for me. If the police arrest and hold me, I won't be able to help you when they strike again tonight. I have to go." She shivered and took the gun. She held it like it might bite her. "I don't understand." "Joan, if I was the one who shot them, I'd have shot you too. Would I give you the gun if I'd done it? Just leave the murder weapon here for the cops?" She hesitated, uncertain. "Help me," I told her. There was a tense note of fear in my voice. "I need to get back to my place, get a few things, and go before the cops start watching it. try to delay them. Just for 5 minutes, please. My God, it's going to happen again if I don't stop it. She glanced over her shoulder at the door. Please, Joan, I said quietly. God, please help me. Silence fell heavily, except for more footsteps coming closer. I must be insane, she said. I must be insane. She stepped aside. I did the only thing I could under the circumstances. It made me look guilty as hell, but if I wanted to keep breathing, I didn't have much choice. I ran,